Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another Morning Magical. And today we begin in Ephesians chapter 5. And the Apostle Paul starts off here with a wonderful instruction. Verse 1. Become, then, imitators of God as beloved children, and be walking in love, according as Christ also loves you, and gives himself up for us. An approach present. Ooh, there's an approach present again. An approach present and a sacrifice to God. So that's an offering, remember. And a sacrifice to God for a fragrant odor. When you look at the first verse, you can see that the phrase, quote, as beloved children, is the key to becoming an imitator of God, quote unquote. So think about this. How often as a child did you and your friends create entire worlds of make-believe? You gave no thought to limitations that adults use to keep their imaginations reined in. Children can imitate anyone and imagine being in any environment. It's this childlike acceptance and ability to think beyond rational limits, or not even to take rational limits into consideration, really, that Paul is encouraging here. Yeshua encouraged much the same attitude in Matthew 18, verse 2. And calling a little child to him, he stands it in their midst and said, Verily I am saying to you, if you should not be turning and becoming as little children, you may by no means be entering into the kingdom of the heavens. Who then will be humbling himself as this little child? He is the greatest in the kingdom of the heavens. What is it about kids? Children are innocent. They're unspoiled. They're entirely accepting. They don't get in their own way because they're not busy trying to figure everything out. These are the characteristics that both the Messiah and the Apostle Paul recommended that we adopt today. So let's move on to Ephesians 5:3 now. Now all prostitution and uncleanness or greed, let it not even be named among you, according as is becoming in saints, and vileness, and stupid speaking, or insinuendo. I'll talk about that word in a minute. Which are not proper, but rather thanksgiving. Paul is just saying, watch your mouth here. And don't you love that word, insinuendo? It's like a combination of insinuation and innuendo. I just love it. Jump down now to verse 6. Let no one be seducing you with empty words, for because of these things the indignation of God, or wrath of God if you prefer, is coming on the sons of the stubbornness. Now we've looked at all that before. You now understand what the indignation of God means. It's specific for Jacob's trouble, and that it's coming on the sons of the stubbornness. These are Jews. Verse 7, Do not then become joint partakers with them, for you were once darkness, yet now you are light in the Lord. As children of the light, here we go again with children, as children of the light be walking, for the fruit of the light is in all goodness and righteousness and truth. Testing, verse 10, testing what is well-pleasing to the Lord. Notice in verse 8, Paul says, You were once darkness, yet now you are light. In other words, you weren't just in darkness, you were darkness. Even better, you aren't just in light, you are light in the Lord. You can know that you are light by the fruit in verse 9, all goodness and righteousness and truth. So how are you doing with all that? Notice that verse 9 is a parenthetical phrase, so let's read verses 8 and 10 together and see what we get here. Verse 8, For you were once darkness, yet now you are light in the Lord. As children of light be walking, testing what is well-pleasing to the Lord. How do you, quote, test what is well-pleasing to the Lord? Well, then verse 9 comes back to help us. For the fruit of the light is in all goodness and righteousness and truth. Everything in this list is well-pleasing to the Lord. Which is to say that anything not on that list is not well-pleasing to the Lord. That's pretty simple, isn't it? It's so simple, a child can do it. In fact, only a child can do it, which is where we started this. In the sense of you and me adopting a childlike attitude and approach to the Father. Do you have anything to add about that?
Kids don't have to have the answers. They're just being kids. And I think part of what keeps us from a closeness with God is thinking and trying to figure things out and plans and presumptions and how anything and judging how anything God would say or add to our lives would deconstruct the life we've built.
Mm-hmm.
And our story and all that stuff. Like when he called me to leave it all and follow Jesus, who would have thought? I left the house on the lake with the pool and the spa, everything, money, goodbye. And be in the welfare line a year later, and it was all the perfect plan of God for my training.
Right.
But children just follow their dads.
Yes.
And know that everything's taken care of, they're taken care of.
Yes. Not only do they follow their dads and their moms, they believe everything that their mom and dad says. Because they're so young, they're just sponges. They don't, mm-hmm. As you just said, they don't think the same way adults think. And the other thing I thought of when you were talking is, there is one characteristic that children have that adults often lose, seems to me, and that's curiosity.
Hmm.
They're always curious. That's why they do so much, I think, pretending. What if this is a pirate ship? And what if the grass in the backyard is all water? What would that be? And you just start, you know, when we did that, if we got out from wherever the pirate ship was, might have been a little swimming pool or something, a little wading pool. When we got out of there, we would move our arms like we're swimming because we're in the water.
You had a more vivid imagination than most.
I don't think so at all.
Really?
No, I do not. No, I don't think I had any more vivid imagination than others. Anyway, the point is that Yeshua would make an example of a child because of their innocence, because of their purity, because of their unspoiled mental processes, if you will, that they haven't constructed their life stories, and that they're still eager and accepting and curious and ready. They'd follow after Yeshua in a heartbeat. Wouldn't think a thing about it. And they could probably do a lot of the miracles he did, because who would have told them not to? Who would have told them they couldn't?
Well, that's what I was thinking about. You thinking that your imaginary life as a kid was normal for most people.
Hmm.
I think your parents would have to have been much more liberal in letting you, like you've said, y'all just played in the neighborhood and went home when it was dark. And your parents never worried about you. But it doesn't seem like your parents put limits on you or would have mocked that kind of thing.
Oh, no.
I think a lot of parents shut kids down and stop that creative learning, their creativity.
Hmm.
I mean, how many people have we worked with or on that the word creative has come up and that gets shut down before they're six?
Yeah.
And so that creativity gets squashed. Like, how many kids really have their prayer language when they come into this world and people think it's baby talking? Now, a lot is baby talking. But how many people have we prayed for or with, and they remember speaking in other languages, and people would tell them, quit baby talking?
Yes, and what was interesting, you know, they always knew that they were other languages. That wasn't, they could tell the difference
mm-hmm.
between that and baby talk
mm-hmm.
when they were small.
Yeah.
Yeah. So cool. Go down with me now to verse 15. Be observing accurately then, brethren and sisteren, how you are walking, not as unwise, but as wise, reclaiming the era, for the days are wicked. This is Paul saying in verse 15, watch what you're doing and be wise about it. Because as you walk wisely, you actually reclaim, as he says in verse 16, reclaiming the era, that means buying it back, buying back this season in which the days are wicked, just by you walking as wise rather than unwise. And then he continues in verse 17, therefore, do not become imprudent, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And be not drunk with wine, in which is profligacy, great word, but be filled full with spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and playing music in your hearts to the Lord. Here's the kicker. Verse 20, giving thanks always for all things in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, to our God and Father, being subject to one another in the fear of Christ. Verse 21 through the first part of verse 22 is a hugely important instruction because, quote, giving thanks always for all things doesn't leave anything out. Not only the good are included, but the bad and the ugly too. The situations and relationships you wish had been different, wish hadn't happened at all. This giving thanks always for all things, it's how the whole memory reframing program that Barbara and I developed boils down to how genuine, heartfelt gratitude dissolves emotional pain, emotional distress, stress itself, and even the physical conditions or effects that can result. And then the last half of verse 21 sets up what follows next. He says, being subject to one another in the fear of Christ. Verse 22, let the wives be subject to their own husbands as to the Lord. The key phrase here is, quote, as to the Lord. Christ doesn't only set the standard for subjection, quote unquote, or submission. He is the standard. We are subject to him, which is what this says. We are subject, and it will say the same thing later. In fact, before I comment further, let me go on with this and not get distracted. Husbands who do not rise to Christ's own standard should not expect their wives to be subject to them, and they cannot demand it of them. We'll see as we read on why this is. Verse 23, for the husband is head of the wife, even as Christ is head of the ecclesia, and he is the savior of the body. Now, this is just the order that God designed. Guys didn't have anything to do with it. That's how he designed it from the beginning. The problem has been that it got abused. This whole patriarchal nonsense has subjected women, not even allowing them to be rightly subjected because the husbands themselves were not playing their position properly. And when a guy's not playing his position properly, he is more likely to be lording it over his wife than creating the proper environment in which she feels safe, covered, protected. Because guys are strong, women are powerful. Then in verse 24, nevertheless, as the ecclesia is subject to Christ, just as the ecclesia is subject to Christ. So look at that relationship. How is that? Christ is not lording over us. He is the Lord. And we just recognize him as such. And in him, we feel safe and protected and covered and so on. So, let me read it again. Nevertheless, as the ecclesia is subject to Christ, thus are the wives also to their husbands in everything. There's nothing wrong with that, so long as the guy isn't abusing the position. And that happens way too often, and it's even sanctioned by religion. Notice again, you know, one of the things, let me stop here. One of the things that always bugged me when we lived in a different area of Dallas, there was a family from India who would go for walks in the evening, and the husband was always 5-10 paces ahead of his wife and daughter, or might have been even her mother and his wife. I don't know who the two women were. And it just made me nuts when I would see that. Japanese tradition did the same thing. The women were always to walk behind the man. And that is just so obnoxious. I just can't stand looking at it. Okay, well, that's me.
Maybe that's why they marry within their own tribes, because normal people wouldn't put up with that. I mean, let them try messing with a real American woman? Ha! No way.
No.
So they'd have to stay in their own identity, I would think. Or get outside that identity enough to be healthy.
Yeah, which might not even occur to them. Hmm. You know, I don't know how it is for, you know, the girls, kids who are born here when their parents are of Indian descent, because they're pretty adamant about keeping their culture.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, my dad used to always say, birds of a feather flock together.
Oh, awesome.
But it really does make a difference. If you're going to have a standard like that, you better stay in your own culture, because anybody else wouldn't mess with it. Can you see some man telling me I'm going to walk 5 steps behind him? He wouldn't see me for the dust.
I know one of the things that made me crazy when we were mentoring different people, especially if it was a couple, I would always watch when they would get in a car. And if they got in different doors, then I would get the husband out of the car and say, let's try this again. And they would get them both out of the car. I said, now go open your wife's door. Go open the door for her. That's the way you do this. Whoever talked you out of that, you need to throw them overboard. That's not right. And you never go through a door ahead of her. It's always ladies first. Now, that's not wrong. That's not, what do you call that? Chauvinistic? And I don't even care if it is.
It's chivalry.
It's just, right, exactly. Chivalry and chauvinistic are two different things. Chauvinism is patronizing the woman. That's not what we're talking about. We're treating them with the respect and honor that they deserve just because they're women. That's all that matters.
And you see that so much more with Southern gentlemen, which is why they're called Southern gentlemen, because they do that. I mean, you,
that's true.
You were raised like that.
That's
by your father. I mean, you patterned that.
That's right.
With how your father treated your mother.
You bet.
But you get up in some of these parts of the country now, men, well, they're so sissies anyway, so many of them, but they wouldn't, where would they have learned that? Remember that one couple who we were doing their wedding, and you stood at the balcony to watch and see if he opened the door for her? Because if not, and you stood there and he said, well, I was going to open the door for her anyway, or something. Do you remember that? You
sure No. did?
You stood over the balcony and were watching that he opened her door. Well, I know my dad, he was watching at the window. There's no way my sister and I were going to open a door. We were going to walk right back in, or he had a shotgun ready.
Well, there was a very young lady who, in the time we knew her, reached, you know, potentially dating age. And I remember running an errand with her, and I made sure I opened the door for her to get in the passenger seat. And I said to her, that's how you're going to know if a guy is a keeper or even has the potential of being a keeper. If he opens the door for you, waits for you to get in before he ever thinks, I don't care if it's raining or storming, before he ever thinks about going on his own door. Same thing going into a building. When we were running the errand, I opened the door for her to whatever the store was, and I said, there's the other sign. If a guy's not going to do that for you, he's not worth your time, because that's going to carry over in Lord knows how many other areas where he's not considerate, not polite.
But you were raised like that. My question is, who's training up men to do that now? Like, I wouldn't want a man I had to train. It's like, your mama should have done that. Your daddy should have done that. But we've got a generation now that's a whole different thing. You wonder who's training them.
Well, obviously, if they're not doing what I just said, nobody's training them.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. So it doesn't occur to him naturally. I understand all that. And there was one other thing I told her. When you go on a date and you get to that car door, you do not get in the car. You wait until one of two things happens. He either gets in or figures on his own, he gets on the other side, or he figures out why you're there. Because if he doesn't, just go back in the house. He's not worth going on a date with.
You bet.
Okay, well that's... there's Tom and Barbara's take on how this ought to work. What started all that? Where was I? Oh, yes, okay. So just to remind us where we left off, nevertheless, as the ecclesia is subject to Christ, thus are the wives also to their husbands in everything. Christ is again the standard, and the ecclesia is an example for the wives. So I'm going to ask again, what is Christ's attitude toward the ecclesia? Well, it's entirely benevolent, kind, nurturing, right? This is exactly the right comparison for how husbands are to behave toward their wives. So let's go on, verse 25. Husbands, be loving your wives, according as Christ also loves the ecclesia. According as, the same as Christ also loves the ecclesia, and gives himself up for its sake, that he should be hallowing it, verse 26, cleansing it in the bath of the water, with his declaration. It's not literal water now. That he should be presenting to himself a glorious ecclesia, not having spot or wrinkle or any such things, but that it may be holy and flawless. How is he going to do that? Because of the way he treats the ecclesia, and the ecclesia then responds to him appropriately. And he says in verse 28, thus. The thus is pointing back to verse 27 and previous. Thus, the husbands also ought to be loving their own wives as their own bodies. And he who is loving his own wife is loving himself. Man, this is so good. If husbands would just read this and get the picture of what the standard is. Verse 29, for no one at any time hates his own flesh, but is nurturing and cherishing it. According as Christ also the ecclesia, or according as Christ also cherishes and nurtures the ecclesia. That's what he's saying here. And why? For we are members of his body. So Christ is loving the ecclesia, loving you and me, as he is loving himself and loving his own body, which is what we read a couple of verses ago. Let me interject here that when a husband plays his position rightly, there's never a problem with the wife being able to honor his position before God. He didn't create that position. He was born into it. Paul is writing this to the Ephesians as a means of correction as much as explanation.
I just think how I've seen you pattern that and you walk that and set a standard for the different women that we have been ministering to, or couples we've been ministering to, and the price that you have paid to nurture and cherish me and the call of God on my life.
Yes.
Like, never have you given resistance to wherever God sent me, however much money it cost, wherever I was to go, whatever I was to do. I've been fully free while being a covered girl. I've been fully free and unlimited, unconstrained, to do whatever God led me to do. While you're praying, while you're covering, while you're nourishing and cherishing me and the call of God on my life. And how many men have you had to say to, because God's raising up the women in this hour?
Yes.
You know, all the divine appointments I'm having in the team God's bringing together, they're all women.
And I tell them, God has no problem taking you out.
That's right.
If you're not going to play your position rightly, recognize your wife's the one with the call. Mm-hmm. You aren't. You don't have it. The best you can do is support her call. And if you come out from under that role and think you're going to somehow usurp it or lord it over her in some way, you're expendable, man. You turn into a puff of smoke as far as God's concerned. He'll get you out of there. And don't think that passage, you know, whoever God joins, let not man be separating. It doesn't say God won't separate you.
You bet.
So just, you need to pay attention to what your role is, for sure.
Because where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty. And you truly have decreased while encouraging me to go on with the call of God on my life. Yeah. While you stay home and take care of business, whatever needs done.
Yeah.
Books.
Right. Websites, all that. Videos. Yeah.
So I can stay in my gift and call. I tell you what, that's why, you know, I think we've got a recording that... Divorce is not, or a video of divorce is not the unpardonable sin.
No.
No man's going to be standing beside me at the dais of Christ to blame, well, my husband this, my husband that. When God called you, he'll keep you. Some of you women need to pull down the husband, God, and all that religious hierarchy. Oh, it's just foul.
It is foul.
It's just foul. I thank God you weren't in the church all those years when that really came to the forefront. And I want to add something here where it says, wives be subject to their own husbands as to the Lord. Because some of these pastors, when you used to go to church or whatever, some of these pastors would tell women what to do. And this is subject to your own husbands. Look at the situations in that one
The doily heads.
That the women were like slaves, had to do whatever the husbands told them, and submit to the leaders, the elders of the church, who gave the husbands permission to do whatever they wanted to do.
That's
it's like,
right.
No.
That's right. I'd forgotten about that, but
man,
that's right. Yeah.
You know, it's not, I looked at on Sunday, it's so freeing just to stay home, and I thank God before this scandemic came, that we've known for years how it is to live in the peace and presence of God. Because I was in ministry for all those years. I mean, I was preaching somewhere on Sundays and usually doing a women's conference on Saturdays. And the freedom to realize, and it took the scandemic for people to, you know, for some people, I pray to God they had a relationship with Jesus that went beyond their preacher and going to church to have their hand stamped every week for an hour.
Yeah.
You know, that nothing, that's changed nothing in our lives.
Didn't you tell me that the divorce rate had increased during the scamdemic?
Yeah.
Did you tell me that?
You know, it's like Dolly, when Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers were being interviewed and talking about their friendship, they said, well, how is it that y'all have maintained this friendship over the years? Well, we don't see each other. It's like my husband and me. We don't see each other very much. So when we're together, we're really happy about it. But you look at how freeing and what liberty it can be. Whom the Son set free is free indeed. I don't have any chains on me. So.
Well, besides my upbringing, it was the whole principle that God set up as he brought us together. Very simple. Say yes to this because it's not coming around again. Okay, so whatever is included in the this, there's not another position to take, but yes. So where you said how much I've decreased. Yeah, but look how long that took to get my brain wrapped around what that looked like, how that worked. Took a year.
It took you being called into your new call.
Yeah.
Which is building everything that's on Whole Life, Whole Health and on the internet as far as anything having to do with us is concerned.
Yeah.
To leave the people coming in every 15 minutes for care in your practice.
Yeah.
For you to walk into your new call like Claudia, Dr. Gabrielle is. She's free to do anything the Holy Spirit leads her to do now.
Right.
She's not seeing patients every 10 minutes.
Right.
How freeing is that? Just to live in the peace and presence of God? Different people, when they know you have the goods, have this whole laundry list of all these people they want you to care for. And I told the massage therapist yesterday, I work with leaders. I didn't finish this, but who will change the lives of millions or billions? Mm. You hit that and you're changing a whole paradigm. Mm. Instead of the people who just want to come in and get a Band-Aid.
Right.
No. I don't. You know, and that doctor said, so where's your practice? Oh, we don't have one. No, thanks. Like Dr. Gabrielle, No. And I told her, because some people don't understand that. It's like, how can you have the goods and not see all these people? We don't see the people because we do have the goods and because we're led by the Holy Spirit. And that's what I told her yesterday. We live in the peace and presence of God. God brings somebody to us, you bet. But we're not going out and working up anything.
No.
It is the blessing in Proverbs. It is the blessing of the Lord that makes rich and he adds no sorrow to it. And God has gone way beyond the business model of strive and drive and push and shove to his model of those who are being led by the Spirit of the living God, and he's bringing a team together in Dallas, Texas, for sure.
Yeah.
Bringing a team together, and it's going to be very exciting what God does with the nobodies from nowhere that don't care what the somebodies from somewhere have to say. Like the massage therapist, she's shocked at what's going on. You know, when God chooses you, when you're just doing your work day in and day out, because it's your passion, and one day God shows up and prophesies a higher level, a calling upon, you know, those who have found been found faithful in little, who are being made ruler over much, because God's certainly picking the players for this move he is preparing.
Okay, so we're in verse 31 here now. For this, now the this is everything we've just been going through. For this, quote, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. This is Paul quoting the Old Testament as usual. And then he says, this secret is great. Yet I am saying this as to Christ and as to the ecclesia. Now, the notion of the relationship between Christ and the ecclesia was never compared to marriage before Paul wrote this section of Ephesians. And look, we're not Christ's wife. He doesn't say bride here, so hang on. We're not the bride of Christ. If you're confused about that, get unconfused. We're not the bride, we're the body. You can't be both. And I don't care about brides. I'm all over being part of the body of Christ. I don't care to be the bride. That's Israel, the remnant of Israel. So let me say it again. The notion of the relationship between Christ and the ecclesia was never compared to marriage before Paul wrote this section of Ephesians. Husbands, listen up, husbands, should be in fear and trembling that they may fulfill their roles properly, because this is the highest standard that Paul sets in front of them. In verse 33, moreover, you also individually, each be loving his own wife thus. Thus as he described in the earlier verse, as Christ loves the ecclesia. Each be loving his own wife thus, as himself, yet that the wife may be fearing the husband. Now, subjection of wives to husbands can work properly so long as everyone is playing their position rightly. There's no room for either spouse to lord it over the other or assume some kind of superior position. We should also acknowledge the time in which Paul wrote this letter, which I gather was pretty firmly patriarchal, and women were pretty much considered second-class citizens. We don't live in that kind of culture, thankfully. So when you see these passages used as an excuse to put women in their place, so to speak, you are witnessing improper application of the scriptures due to a complete misunderstanding of them in the first place. Now, let's move on to the first part of chapter 6, and we'll close it out with this, which goes along the same general theme, beginning in verse 1. Children, be obeying your parents in the Lord, for this is just. I'll address this in a minute. Honor your father and mother, which is the first precept with a promise, that it may be becoming well with you, and you should be a long time on the earth. That's the promise. Honor your father and mother is the commandment, and the other half is the promise. So here's the deal. Insisting on obedience in our children is essential for them to grow up into decent citizens. When children are unruly or disobedient, the fault is not with the child, but with the parent or parents. Just as husbands must play their position rightly with respect to their wives, so must both parents play their positions rightly with respect to their children. Obedience must be expected. I'll go further. Obedience is demanded. And there's a way to do that. I'm not going to get into all that today. And fathers, verse 4, do not be vexing your children. Don't cause them consternation, but be nurturing them in the discipline and admonition of the Lord. Teach them, fathers, and mothers for that matter, teach your children in the discipline and admonition of the Lord. You're the only ones who can. If you let them run wild, they will become wild. We're watching it now in cities all over this country right now. In this next section, let's move on. Just substitute now the word employees and employers for slaves and masters, which is what the text reads, and it'll make more sense, be a little more palatable, because I don't like the word slaves, and I'm sure you don't either, or masters. Verse 5, slaves, be obeying your masters according to the flesh. Now, this is not obey them according to the flesh. It's these are your masters according to the flesh, as opposed to masters according to the Spirit. You follow that? Be obeying your masters according to the flesh with fear and trembling, in the singleness of your heart as to Christ, not with eye slavery as man pleasers, so this is all fakery, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the soul with good humor, slaving as to the Lord and not to men. Being aware that, verse 8, whatsoever good each one should be doing, for this he will be requited or repaid, recompensed by the Lord, whether slave or free. And that requiting, quote-unquote, that Paul mentions in verse 8 here, is again a reference to the dais of Christ that we explored earlier in our morning magical sessions not too long ago. He continues in verse 9, and masters, be doing the same toward them, toward the slaves now, being lax in threatening. Don't beat them up with threats. Being aware that their master, as well as yours, is in the heavens. And there's no partiality with him. He'll take you out as sure as he'll take them out, so to speak. There's no partiality with him. And then verse 10, for the rest, brethren mine, sister in mine, be invigorated in the Lord and in the might of his strength. And this is a good stopping point before we get into what to me is the exciting subject of what Paul calls, quote, the panoply of God or the complete armor of God. So stay tuned. We'll get into that. And until then, may Yahweh bless you and keep you. May Yahweh light up his face toward you and be gracious to you. May Yahweh lift his face to you and appoint peace for you. Amen. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day. Take care. Bye.